1. The Old Sea Dog at the Admiral Benbow. Squire Trelawney, Dr. Livesey, and the rest of these gentlemen, having asked me to write down the whole particulars about Treasure Island from the beginning to the end, keeping nothing back but the bearings of the island, and that only because there's still treasure not yet lifted, I take up my pen in the year of grace 1783. And go back to the time when my father kept the Admiral Benbow Inn, and the brown old seaman with the saber cut first took up his lodging under our roof. I remember him as if it were yesterday, as he came plodding to the inn door, his sea chest following him in a hand barrow. A tall, strong, heavy, nut-brown man, his tarry pigtail falling over the shoulder of his soiled blue coat. His hands ragged and scarred, with black broken nails, and the saber cut across one cheek, a dirty, livid white. I remember him looking round the cove and whistling to himself as he did so, and then breaking out in that old sea song that he sang so often afterward.
15 men on the dead man's chest, yo ho ho, and a bottle of rum.
In the high, old, tottering voice that seemed to have been tuned and broken at the capstan bars. Then he rapped on the door with a bit of stick like a handspike that he carried, and when my father appeared, called roughly for a glass of rum. This, when it was brought to him, he drank slowly, like a connoisseur, lingering on the taste and still looking about him at the cliffs and up at our signboard.
"This is a handy cove," he says at length, "and a pleasant situated grog shop. Much company, mate?"
My father told him no, very little company. The more was the pity.
"Well then," said he, "this is the bath for me. Here you, matey," he cried to the man who trundled the barrow. "Bring up alongside and help up me chest. I'll stay here a bit," he continued. "I'm a plain man, room and bacon and eggs is what I want, and that head up there for to watch the ships off. What you might call me? You might call me captain. Oh, I see what you're at there."
And he threw down 3 or 4 gold pieces on the threshold.
"You can tell me when I've worked through that," says he, looking as fierce as a commander.
And indeed, bad as his clothes were and coarsely as he spoke, he had none of the appearance of a man who sailed before the mast, but seemed like a mate or skipper accustomed to being obeyed or to strike. The man who came with the barrow told us the mail had set him down the morning before at the Royal George, that he had inquired what inns there were along the coast, and hearing ours were well spoken of, I suppose, and described as lonely, had chosen it from the others for his place of residence. And that was all we could learn of our guest. He was a very silent man by custom. All day he hung round the cove or upon the cliffs with a brass telescope. All evening he sat in a corner of the parlor next to the fire and drank rum and water very strong. Mostly he would not speak when spoken to, only look up sudden and fierce and blow through his nose like a foghorn. And we and the people who came about to our house soon learned to let him be. Every day when he came back from his stroll, he would ask if any seafaring men had gone by along the road. At first we thought it was that he wanted company of his own kind that made him ask this question, but at last we began to see he actually wanted to avoid them. When a seaman did put up at the Admiral Benbow, as now and then some did, making by the coast road for Bristol, he would look in at him through the curtain door before he entered the parlor. And he was always as silent as a mouse when any such was present. For me, at least, there was no secret about the matter, for I was, in a way, a sharer in his alarms. He had taken me aside one day and promised me a silver 4-penny on the 1st of every month if I would only keep my "whether I open for a seafaring man with one leg," and let him know the moment he appeared.